Chapter 5. I had been having considerable trouble with my wings. The day after I helped the choir, I made a dash or two with them, but was not lucky. First off, I flew 30 yards, and then fouled an Irishman, and brought him down, brought us both down, in fact. Next, I had a collision with a bishop and bowled him down, of course. We had some sharp words, and I felt pretty cheap, to come banging into a grave old person like that, with a million strangers looking on and smiling to themselves. I saw I hadn't got the hang of the steering, and so couldn't rightly tell where I was going to bring up when I started. I went afoot the rest of the day, and let my wings hang. Early next morning I went to a private place to have some practice. I got up on a pretty high rock, and got a good start, and went swooping down, aiming for a bush a little over 300 yards off. But I couldn't seem to calculate for the wind, which was about 2 points abaft my beam. I could see I was going considerable to leeward of the bush, so I worked my starboard wing slow, and went ahead strong on the port one, but it wouldn't answer. I could see I was going to broach to, so I slowed down on both, and lit. I went back to the rock, and took another chance at it. I aimed 2 or 3 points to starboard of the bush, yes, more than that, enough so, as to make it nearly a headwind. I done well enough, but made pretty poor time. I could see, plain enough, that on a headwind, wings was a mistake. I could see that a body could sail pretty close to the wind, but he couldn't go in the wind's eye. I could see that, if I wanted to go visiting any distance from home, and the wind was ahead, I might have to wait days, maybe, for a change. And I could see too, that these things could not be any use at all in a gale. If you tried to run before the wind, you would make a mess of it, for there isn't any way to shorten sail like reefing. You know, you have to take it all in, shut your feathers down flat to your sides. That would land you, of course. You could lay to, with your head to the wind, that is the best you could do, and right hard work you'd find it to. If you tried any other game, you would founder, sure. I judge it was about a couple of weeks or so after this, that I dropped old Sandy McWilliams a note one day, it was a Tuesday, and asked him to come over, and take his manna and quails with me next day, and the first thing he did, when he stepped in was to twinkle his eye in a sly way, and say, "Well, Cap, what you done with your wings?" I saw in a minute, that there was some sarcasm done up in that rack somewheres, but I never let on. I only says, "Gone to the wash." "Yes," he says, in a dry sort of way, "they mostly go to the wash about this time, I've often noticed it. Fresh angels are powerful neat. When do you look for 'em back?" "Day after tomorrow," says I. He winked at me, and smiled. Says I, "Sandy, out with it. Come, no secrets among friends. I notice you don't ever wear wings, and plenty others don't. I've been making an ass of myself, is that it?" "That is about the size of it. But it is no harm. We all do it at first. It's perfectly natural. You see, on Earth we jump to such foolish conclusions, as to things up here. In the pictures we always saw the angels with wings on and that was all right, but we jumped to the conclusion that that was their way of getting around dash dash and that was all wrong. The wings ain't anything but a uniform, that's all. When they are in the field, so to speak, they always wear them. You never see an angel going with a message anywhere without his wings, any more than you would see a military officer presiding at a court-martial without his uniform, or a postman delivering letters, or a policeman walking his beat, in plain clothes. But they ain't to fly with. The wings are for show, not for use. Old experienced angels are like officers of the regular army, they dress plain, when they are off duty. New angels are like the militia, never shed the uniform, always fluttering and floundering around in their wings, butting people down, flapping here, and there, and everywhere, always imagining they are attracting the admiring eye. Well, they just think they are the very most important people in heaven. And when you see one of them come sailing around with one wing tipped up and t'other down, you make up your mind he is saying to himself, I wish Marianne in Arkansas could see me now. I reckon she'd wish as he hadn't shook me. Apostrophe apostrophe no, they're just for show, that's all only just for show. I judge you've got it about right, Sandy, says I, why, look at it yourself, says he. Oh, you ain't built for wings, no man is. You know what a grist of years it took you to come here from the earth, and yet you were booming along faster than any cannonball could go. Suppose you had to fly that distance with your wings, wouldn't eternity have been over before you got here? Certainly. Well, angels have to go to the earth every day, millions of them, to appear in visions to dying children and good people. You know it's the heft of their business. They appear with their wings, of course, because they are on official service, and because the dying persons wouldn't know they were angels if they hadn't wings. But do you reckon they fly with them? It stands to reason they don't. The wings would wear out before they got halfway. Even the pin feathers would be gone. The wing frames would be as bare as kite sticks before the paper is pasted on. The distances in heaven are billions of times greater. Angels have to go all over heaven every day. Could they do it with their wings alone? No, indeed. They wear the wings for style, but they travel any distance in an instant by wishing. The wishing carpet of the Arabian Nights was a sensible idea, but our earthly idea of angels flying these awful distances with their clumsy wings was foolish. Our young saints, of both sexes, wear wings all the time, blazing red ones, and blue and green, and gold, and variegated, and rainbowed, and ring-streaked and striped ones, and nobody finds fault. It is suitable to their time of life. The things are beautiful, and they set the young people off. They are the most striking and lovely part of their outfit, a halo don't begin. Well, says I've tucked mine away in the cupboard, and I allow to let them lay there till there's mud. Yes, or a reception. What's that? Well, you can see one tonight, if you want to. There's a barkeeper from Jersey City going to be received. Go on, tell me about it. This barkeeper got converted at a Moody and Sankey meeting in New York, and started home on the ferry boat, and there was a collision and he got drowned. He is of a class that think all heaven goes wild with joy when a particularly hard lot like him is saved. They think all heaven turns out a sanding to welcome them. They think there isn't anything talked about in the realms of the blessed but their case for that day. This barkeeper thinks there hasn't been such another stir here in years, as his coming is going to raise. And I've always noticed this peculiarity about a dead barkeeper. He not only expects all hands to turn out when he arrives, but he expects to be received with a torchlight procession. I reckon he is disappointed, then. No, he isn't. No man is allowed to be disappointed here. Whatever he wants, when he comes, that is, any reasonable and unsacrilegious thing he can have. There's always a few millions or billions of young folks around who don't want any better entertainment than to fill up their lungs and swarm out with their torches, and have a high time over a barkeeper. It tickles the barkeeper till he can't rest. It makes a charming lark for the young folks. It don't do anybody any harm. It don't cost a rap. And it keeps up the place's reputation for making all comers happy and content. Very good. I'll be on hand and see them land the barkeeper. It is manners to go in full dress. You want to wear your wings, you know, and your other things. Which ones? Halo, and harp, and palm branch, and all that. Well, says I reckon I ought to be ashamed of myself, but the fact is I left them laying around that day I resigned from the choir. I haven't got a rag to wear, but this robe and the wings. That's all right. You'll find they've been raked up and saved for you. Send for them. I'll do it, Sandy. But what was it you was saying about unsacrilegious things, which people expect to get, and will be disappointed about? Oh, there are a lot of such things, that people expect and don't get. For instance, there's a Brooklyn preacher by the name of Tomich, who is laying up a considerable disappointment for himself. He says, every now and then in his sermons, that the first thing he does, when he gets to heaven, will be to fling his arms around Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and kiss them, and weep on them. There's millions of people down there on earth, that are promising themselves the same thing. As many as 60,000 people arrive here every single day, that want to run straight to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and hug them, and weep on them. Now mind you, 60,000 a day is a pretty heavy contract for those old people. If they were a mind to allow it, they wouldn't ever have anything to do, year in and year out, but stand up, and be hugged and wept on 32 hours, in the 24. They would be tired out, and as wet as muskrats all the time. What would heaven be, to them? It would be a mighty good place to get out of, you know that, yourself. Those are kind, and gentle old Jews, but they ain't any fonder of kissing the emotional highlights of Brooklyn than you be. You mark my words, Mr. T.S. endearments are going to be declined, with thanks. There are limits to the privileges of the elect, even in heaven. Why, if Adam was to show himself to every newcomer that wants to call, and gaze at him, and strike him for his autograph, he would never have time to do anything else but just that. Tomich has said he is going to give Adam some of his attentions, as well as A, 1, and J. But he will have to change his mind about that. Do you think Tomage will really come here? Why, certainly, he will. But don't you be alarmed. He will run with his own kind, and there's plenty of them. That is the main charm of heaven. There's all kinds here which wouldn't be the case if you let the preachers tell it. Anybody can find the sort he prefers here, and he just lets the others alone, and they let him alone. When the deity builds a heaven, it is built right, and on the liberal plan. Sandy sent home for his things, and I sent for mine, and about 9 in the evening we begun to dress. Sandy says, this is going to be a grand time for you, Stormy. Like as not some of the patriarchs will turn out. No, but will they? Like as not. Of course they are pretty exclusive. They hardly ever show themselves to the common public. I believe they never turn out except for an 11th hour convert. They wouldn't do it then, only earthly tradition makes a grand show pretty necessary on that kind of an occasion. Do they and turn out, Sandy? Who? All the patriarchs? Oh, no, hardly ever more than a couple. You will be here 50,000 years, maybe more, before you get a glimpse of all the patriarchs and prophets. Since I have been here, Job has been to the front once, and once Ham and Jeremiah both at the same time. But the finest thing that has happened in my day was a year or so ago. That was Charles Peace's reception. They called the Banner Cross murderer an Englishman. There were 4 patriarchs and 2 prophets on the grandstand. That time there hasn't been anything like it since Captain Kidd came. Abel was there the first time in 1200 years. A report got around that Adam was coming. Well, of course, Abel was enough to bring a crowd, all by himself, but there is nobody that can draw like Adam. It was a false report, but it got around, anyway, as I say, and it will be a long day before I see the like of it again. The reception was in the English department, of course, which is 811 million miles from the New Jersey line. I went, along with a good many of my neighbors, and it was a sight to see, I can tell you. Flocks came from all the departments. I saw Esquimaux there, and Tartars, Negroes, Chinamen, people from everywhere. You see a mixture like that in the grand choir, the first day you land here, but you hardly ever see it again. There were billions of people, when they were singing or hosannaing, the noise was wonderful, and even when their tongues were still the drumming of the wings, was nearly enough to burst your head, for all the sky was as thick as if it was snowing angels. Although Adam was not there, it was a great time anyway, because we had three archangels on the grandstand. It is a seldom thing that even one comes out. What did they look like, Sandy? Well, they had shining faces, and shining robes, and wonderful rainbow wings, and they stood 18 feet high, and wore swords, and held their heads up in a noble way, and looked like soldiers. Did they have halos? No, anyway, not the hoop kind. The archangels and the upper-class patriarchs wear a finer thing than that. It is a round, solid, splendid glory of gold that is blinding to look at. You have often seen a patriarch in a picture, on Earth, with that thing on, you remember it? He looks as if he had his head in a brass platter. That don't give you the right idea of it at all. It is much more shining and beautiful. Did you talk with those archangels and patriarchs, Sandy? Who I? Why, what can you be thinking about, Stormy? I ain't worthy to speak to such as they. Is Tomich? Of course not. You have got the same mixed up idea about these things that everybody has down there. I had it once, but I got over it. Down there they talk of the Heavenly King, and that is right, but then they go right on speaking, as if this was a republic, and everybody was on a dead level with everybody else, and privileged to fling his arms around anybody he comes across, and be hail fellow well met with all the elect, from the highest down. How tangled up and absurd that is. How are you going to have a republic under a king? How are you going to have a republic at all, where the head of the government is absolute, holds his place forever, and has no parliament, no council to meddle or make in his affairs, nobody voted for, nobody elected, nobody in the whole universe with a voice in the government, nobody asked to take a hand in its matters, and nobody allowed to do it? Fine republic, ain't it? Well, yes, it is a little different from the idea I had, but I thought I might go around and get acquainted with the grandees. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.